You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, everybody should be as lucky as I am to be married to an Italian who cooks, because that was an amazing Italian dinner, and thank you. And so your reward tonight is this little cappuccino that I made for you, because I know you love them.
Well, wow, you took me by surprise. Thank you so much. It's nice to be appreciated. I think I got my cooking talents from my dad and my uncles, so thank you so much.
You're welcome. Enjoy your cappuccino.
All right, so what's on your mind?
I always need to think to talk with you about things that kind of roll around in my head during the day and stay there, you know? And one of the things that's kind of staying there today is right now and in the past weeks, we've been seeing this kind of caravan of people coming through Mexico that are heading to our border that are wanting to come into the United States.
Right, the Central Americans.
Sure. And President Trump has said, no, people are not just going to be coming into the United States. And of course, their plan, I guess, is to ask for asylum, which is kind of a high bar from what I've read to be able to receive asylum. Most people pass through the first kind of little test that they give, right. But more than 80% don't pass that asylum test. So now we've got people sitting on the border, and what we have apparently is a lot of our American attorneys going down there to kind of instruct them. Sometimes I feel like it's on how to beat the system, and I'm not sure if I'm right or wrong on that. But they're there to instruct them, I guess, what to expect and what to do, and to expect that they could be separated from their families and they could be, having to wait a while, and they could be released with ankle bracelets and all these various things. Where what I know is that Jeff Sessions has really said that the caravan is a deliberate attempt to undermine our laws and overwhelm our system.
He's not the only person saying that. You know.
Well, yeah. What do you think about all this?
Well, you and I have been down to Central America, and we've got a place in Mexico as well. I think you and I know the culture very well. You know, I speak it fluently, and we both come from families of immigrants. You know, I'm first generation Italian. You're second generation Dutch, and this is just clearly wrong. The United States cannot be the country that holds all of the people that are having problems in their own countries, okay? I get the thing about, people needing asylum because it's violent or, you know, whatever, but that's not what I'm seeing here. In some of the research, and there was some recent research that was just done where they interviewed 1,500 Hondurans, and it was, I mean, overwhelmingly economical, right? I mean, this is why they're coming here. They're coming here because of getting work, of getting employment, getting a better life. I get that you want a better life, but why don't you go someplace else to get that better life or get some skills, get some job skills, get some education, and come into the country the legal way, and not trying to do an end run so that you actually offer something to the United States. The thing that bothers me about this, having parents that got education, that got job skills, and came into this country legally, and it took them years to get their citizenship, is that these people are doing an end run, and they are gaming the system. And these attorneys that are going down there, and I'm not so sure that, you know, we can prove that they actually go into the country of Mexico, but certainly, and I just heard one interviewed just yesterday, they are absolutely on the border and giving them all sorts of advice, but it isn't the type of advice that is the appropriate type of advice. It's what to say and how to game the system. And that just absolutely bothers me because it's
right.
Wrong. It's wrong.
The advice definitely is not turn around and go back. And I understand that a lot of these people are from Honduras and have come through Mexico. And, you know, Honduras does have problems. And some people say that they have been told to sell drugs, excuse me, or they will be killed. And, you know, how do you prove or disprove that
exactly.
in a claim for amnesty?
Exactly.
So the fact is that Mexico has offered them amnesty and told them that they could stay.
Right.
So why not just stay there? And I think to your point, Ron, is that a better life can be had in the United States. And I fully respect and understand that and agree with that. But again, it's right. We can't be doing these end runs to get into the United States just by hook or by crook. It's not the right thing to do. So, yeah, I have a problem with it. I really hope that President Trump stays strong on this, and that Jeff Sessions stays strong on this, and that they hold the ground that they promised us that they would hold.
But you know what? It's a lot more than that, okay? You know, it's more than holding the ground. It's about changing the laws and revisiting the 14th Amendment. You know, I'm not an attorney, but to me, the 14th Amendment was never instituted for what they are using the protections of the 14th Amendment right now in allowing all these illegal aliens to come into this country and actually turning the United States of America into a third world country itself. Listen, if all you have coming into this country are uneducated people with limited rudimentary job skills, in other words, the only thing they can do is, you know, dig a ditch or cut your lawn or something like that, you cannot build a vibrant economy on this, okay? Because these people, and we already know this, and we came from California where this was just very evident, they drain all of our systems. They drain the social service system. They drain the welfare system. They drain the medical system. They drain the criminal justice system. And we just can't have this, okay? But our president and our Congress and our Senate have got to be engaged in rewriting these laws so we don't have this problem.
Well, and we've been looking at doing that for so long, and we're so obstructed right now that none of this is going to end up getting done just because we can't seem to agree on what to have for breakfast in Washington anymore. So I don't have any hope for that. But I do for the moment hope that they hold strong at the border and they don't just indiscriminately let these people cross and stay. I mean, even when you're talking about putting ankle bracelets on them,
I don't understand why they'd
be here, why they'd be allowed in here in the first place to even get an ankle bracelet on them.
Well, because once they get across the border, they are afforded all of the constitutional rights that an American citizen has. Let me tell you what, we can't even afford to put ankle bracelets on known felons, convicted felons in the United States who are on probation or parole. Okay, we can't even afford to do that. You think we're going to put ankle bracelets on a bunch of illegals in this country? It's not going to happen. And I'm going to tell you what, we're in serious trouble here because all they have to do is come across the border. And then once they come across the border, they belong to us, all right? And every single person that comes across that border, you know, people ought to start thinking, especially voters, you better start thinking about what it costs us to do this, okay? And it's a slippery slope, which brings me to what I want to talk about, but I'll let you finish that thought.
Well, I just was going to give you a little thing that you may not have heard this week was that a Los Angeles police officer was arrested.
Oh, I did hear it. Yep.
Okay, transporting two illegals across the border himself. And what are we thinking there? But anyway, what did you want to talk about?
Well, you know, let's talk about the slippery slope. And a Maryland city voted just this week, and the name of the city is College Park. And you and I were just in Washington, D.C. last week at College Park. I don't know if you remember. We flew right over College Park to fly into Reagan. And it's a suburb outside of D.C. of about 32,000 people. roughly 20-22% are foreign-born people, and their city council just voted this week to enfranchise non-citizens. Okay, and what is that all about? What does enfranchise mean? It gives them the right to vote on things that are happening in that city. So, the city council approved it. My God. Okay.
I believe that happened also in California recently, where California is, if they haven't done it already, they are giving the illegals the ability to vote in local elections and things. You know, of course, they can't vote in the countrywide elections, but right. in local and state elections. And I don't even understand what are we doing here?
Well, it happened in San Francisco. Okay. And it's also happened in Chicago, but it's also happened in several other cities in the state of Maryland. And so what the approved measure allows these people to do, and who are we talking about? We're talking about undocumented migrants. We're talking about student visa holders and residents with green cards, all right, to vote in local elections. And, I mean, I personally think that this just furthers the Democratic agenda because they're hemorrhaging, okay? They're hurting for voters, and they're really concerned about these 2018 elections, and they're really concerned about, the 2020 elections, which will be a presidential election, and they need to bolster the ranks of Democrats, and that's why they're bringing in felons. You know, Cuomo, we haven't talked about this before, but Cuomo just recently approved felons.
So did Jerry Brown.
To get the vote. That's right. Jerry Brown did in 2016, I think.
In California, right. And I think, Ron, that was one of our final straws in saying why we needed to, just on a personal, our own personal decision to leave California, because those things were so offensive to us that people were being let out of jail and people were being given rights that they really had no business having. And it really has become a situation, and is becoming more and more every day, of a situation where the illegal people have more rights than the legal people. And it's just has gotten very frustrating. But to give them, anybody, the right to vote. Now, we can't go to Mexico, even to our own home in Mexico, and vote in their elections.
Look, and you know what? We don't drive a car there, okay? So we use...
No, because... No, for good reason.
You're going to say because I'm a bad driver.
I was not going to say that. I said for good reason.
But what I was going to say was that it's so difficult to get a driver's license in Mexico, okay? As compared to California, all right? That's what I was going to say.
No, I have a hard time getting used to the way that they drive there. Their roads are different. If you even call that they, I don't think that they have any rules about driving, which probably is my issue, is that there are no rules. But yeah, you can't... This does not go two ways. It goes just, it's a one-way street here, where we as the United States of America are giving everything and not getting the same treatment, certainly, back from other countries. And by the way, I wouldn't expect that. I would not expect to go to Mexico and be able for it to be easy for me to get a driver's license or be easy for me to vote. I don't expect that. So why they should expect it here, I don't really condone.
Right, and neither do I. You know, we were talking about the other night during dinner. We were talking about Medicare and prescription drugs, and now that we're older, we're on that Medicare system.
Speak for yourself there.
Oh, and we were talking about how we're not even getting good health care, and illegal aliens in this country get better health care than we do as seniors, right?
Well, absolutely. They absolutely do. And I mean, that's a conversation that you and I continue to have, because it's very frustrating. And I think it's a long and involved conversation. But there's one thing that I kind of want to bring up that I just made me laugh out loud today, and I think you're going to laugh out loud too. So the University of Utah has instituted cry closets so that stressed out students, that are taking tests can go in there and have a good cry. You get that cry closet for about 10 minutes, and you can go in there and take out all your frustrations and then come back and take your test.
Are you being serious with me?
I am being very serious.
You read that somewhere, right?
Are they being serious? Yeah. This goes along with what's the other thing you always complain about on student campuses? The
need a safe zone and
a safe zone. So, you know, I think I may institute it in my office so that when I get frustrated, I just can go in and have a good cry and then come out and get back to my job.
Well, what else you got?
Well, a little bit of good news. Just this week, the guy that was on the run in Maine for slaying a deputy was arrested, and glad to see that he was arrested. And that's John Williams, who killed Corporal Eugene Cole. Glad that they were able to catch him and able to handcuff him with Corporal Cole's very handcuffs he was carrying at the time that he was assassinated.
You know, I'll tell you what, and we lost a deputy in Nogales, Arizona last night on a carjacking situation, and he was shot and killed. And you know, as a first responder family, and you know, you and I have both been on the job, and we've got one of our boys who's in law enforcement, we worry about that boy and all of the brother and sister officers every single day. And you know, I keep stats on this thing because it's what I do. And people, you know, that we talk with, Lynn, I mean, they don't even know about how many officers that we've lost. You know, so far We've lost 45 of our police officers who have died in line of duty this year.
And 20,
And you know, it's worse, honey. It's worse because 26 were killed by gunfire, murdered by suspects with firearms, and the murdered officers by firearms is up an amazing 70% over this same time last year and also 2016. Now, you know, I wrote that book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, and I talked a lot about this with all the stats. And in 2016, we lost 135 officers, and that was the highest number of officers that we've had murdered since the early 1970s, where we first began our law enforcement careers, and before that, during the Bonnie and Clyde times in 1933. And in 2017, we lost 129 officers, and out of that 129, 46 were killed by firearms. So this is just a war on cops, and I know people in our community know right about it, and I think we're so blessed to live where we do in Texas because they are so supportive of law enforcement, and I think just people need to wake up and see, you know, that these men and women give their lives for the freedoms and civil rights.
Well, they're heroes.
They're heroes. They're absolutely heroes. Sure. And I don't know too many people that that protect civil rights more than police officers. And, you know, and that's also, I have to say something about law enforcement. They don't generally do a good job of describing themselves as fighters for civil rights, and they let the media turn around and say they are people who remove civil rights, you know, when you and I know that that's not the truth at all.
Well, it's exactly the opposite.
Exactly. So anyway, you know what? After just talking about this terrible news, I think I'm just going to, you know, pour us another cup of coffee.
Okay.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, you know, Ron, I wrote an article this week that's on America Out Loud, and it's called The Politics of Obstruction, Destruction, and Intimidation.
Well, that's an interesting title.
Lots of shuns in there, huh? You know, it's about the whole situation. It's not about one situation in my mind, but maybe the newest one was the slander that Senator John Tester spewed regarding Admiral Ronnie Jackson. And he spread a lot of, I guess I would call them lies, but he spread a lot of innuendos about Admiral Jackson, and Admiral Jackson ended up resigning from being in the running to be the head of the VA.
Right.
Okay. You know, I've thought about this, and it's over and over and over. So the politics of obstruction in my mind is all the obstruction that's happening on obstructing all of the nominees that President Trump has put forward for any position, and they're all being slow walked to be able to be approved for their positions. They're taking the maximum amount of time and they're slow walking them, and just never have we had this in history that this has happened to a president the way that it's happening now.
You know, and he's got hundreds of positions that need to be filled.
Right. And the politics of destruction is what I see that happened with Admiral Jackson. So you take a man who has been a good and faithful servant to the people of this country. He's been a physician in the White House under both Democratic and Republican presidents. He really has had an impeccable reputation. Now, you can argue and say perhaps he doesn't have the experience to run a Veterans Administration with hundreds of hospitals and 370,000 employees, but nobody has been doing it well under any administration in recent history. So how do you say that he's not qualified? And how do you say that those people were qualified who did get approved and did a terrible and horrible job? So here's a man who was an admiral, and I know that you know more about him as a person than I do, but my point about this is, how do you know that he was not the best man for that job? And what I do know about President Trump is, and what I love about President Trump is, that as a businessman, he has that the kind of mind that if he puts somebody in a position and it doesn't work, he changes that person and he makes a different choice. That's all that we can ask of anybody. There's no guarantee anybody is going to do anything the way that they should do it. But you have to pick the best pick, just like you do as any employer would do. Pick the best person. If it doesn't work out, you have to make a change. And the thing about President Trump is he is willing to make those changes. He does not leave people in positions when they can't do the job. So why did John Tester take it upon himself to have to destroy this man's reputation, his integrity, and say all of the things out loud that have since been disproven, and we have lost this candidate? And I feel like saying that John Tester, you know, great, I'm so proud of you. I hope you're proud of yourself for causing that, and maybe you got a little win against President Trump. Good for you. But you know what you did? You made every veteran who has served this country lose by what you did. And how dare he do that? I just am so insulted that people play this destruction game to get a win against President Trump.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. When you cut the veterans out of the decision-making process, and you don't even allow a person that I think is qualified for this job. And by the way, you know, I looked up the histories on both these guys, and I want to talk about it in a little bit. But
yeah, because I haven't heard it.
Oh well, believe me, this was one of those things for, you know, frost my socks, right? And
yep.
As soon as I heard this, and by the way, you know, the Democrats and Tester have already walked this back. Okay, so remember where they were saying that Ronny Jackson got involved in, you know, three automobile accidents, and like you said, that was an inference, right? It was an inference that they were DUIs, right? It was
right,
an inference
right.
that it was his fault. Well, one of the accidents was what I wouldn't even call it an accident. It was the side view mirror got damaged on his vehicle, okay?
But, by a truck.
Yeah.
A truck going by.
Two of the accidents weren't even his fault, for God's sakes, right?
Right.
And
right.
there is no evidence whatsoever that Rear Admiral Trester had been drinking and driving. I mean, none whatsoever. And so but notice that after Ronny Jackson pulls his name, you know, out of the ring, so he's not going to be in contention for the Secretary of the VA, now all of a sudden they're walking this back. The Democrats are walking this back.
Yeah, but they got what they wanted already.
Well, no, that's
it. Yeah.
And you know, you call it destructive, and I agree, but I also think it's intimidation. Okay, I think they believe that if they can throw a lot of spaghetti on the wall and scare these candidates, scare these applicants, then they'll intimidate them into, number one, not wanting to ever apply for the job if the president calls upon them, right? Not ever run for office if the president asks them to run for an office or take a position. But also, if they're already in the ring, to take their nomination out.
Because, Ron, who wants to go through that in their life?
Oh,
who wants to go through that whole process of having your life opened like an open book and being criticized for everything you've ever done? And who among us cannot be criticized for something that they've ever done in life?
Absolutely.
We are losing so many good people by this politics of destruction.
You know, we have a country that needs to move forward. We have moved forward since President Trump has come into office, and that's why we voted him in. We didn't vote him in because he was a politician. We voted him in because he was a doer. I want to talk about, in line of what you're discussing, I did my homework. So I want to tell you a little bit about John Tester, and I want to do a compare and contrast with Admiral Ronny Jackson.
Okay, good.
So I think that's interesting, right?
Because I want to hear it.
Tester's saying, look, this guy's not qualified for the job, right? So
right.
Tester's bringing this up, and he's just forwarding what the Democrats are. So let's talk about who's qualified for which job. Let's talk
okay.
about Tester, okay? And his job is in the Senate, okay? And so here's a guy that's on a bunch of different committees, all right? He's on the Finance Committee. He's on the Agriculture Committee. He's on the Rules Committee, and he's on the Business, Labor, and Economic Affairs Committee. They can't put these guys on enough committees, for God's sakes.
Right.
Right. So what were his qualifications for the job of Senator, United States Senator? Okay, now, I don't know if you remember or even know, but he first got elected in 2006. Okay, so a senator should have what? A lot of civics knowledge. They should have knowledge in international affairs, in domestic affairs. I mean, all sorts of things that they vote on, right? Every
right.
single day. Okay, so what do you think this guy's degree is in? His bachelor's degree is in music.
Okay, oh.
So that's him. Okay, so here's a guy that's a senator that got his bachelor's degree in a liberal art in music and was a music teacher. Okay. Now, I hope music teachers aren't offended, okay, but listen, you're a music teacher, for God's sakes, okay, and you're applying for the job of senator, all right? So he was a music teacher, he is a farmer, and that's a good thing to be, okay? That would certainly help one on the Agriculture Committee, but
absolutely.
What is his other what's his other experience? He was 5 years on a school board, okay, and then he was involved with on a committee on soil conservation, and then he got, I guess, elected to the Montana State Senate, and at one point he was president of the Montana State Senate. So his first job in politics is a state senator of Montana, And the only experience he had was he had a bachelor's degree in music. He was a music teacher and a farmer. Okay? So here's what's also important. He's 62 years old. Okay? Let's talk about Admiral Ronnie Jackson, who's 12 years younger than him. Okay? Which is a long time, right? 12 years is a big difference in age.
Sure.
But let's, and by the way, I don't know if you know this, but Admiral Jackson comes from Levelland, Texas. So he's a Texas boy.
Well, of course.
All right. So here's what he's got. He got his bachelor's degree in marine biology, and he got his MD from the University of Texas Medical School. He's a diplomat in the American Board of Emergency Medicine. He's a fellow in the American Academy of Emergency Medicine. He's on the faculty of the Universal and University of Health Services. He was an honor graduate, graduated at the top of his class in medical school, and then also an honor graduate in the Navy, because you know he's a veteran, right? That's why he's a rear admiral.
Right.
And in the Navy's Undersea Medical Officers Program. Here's what's really kind of cool about Ronnie Jackson. He's a former Navy diver. I don't know if you ever saw that movie with Cuba Gooding, but it was called Men of Honor, and that's all about Navy divers. And to see the type of training and perseverance that they have in order to become a Navy deep water diver is absolutely incredible. But he went beyond that. Not only a Navy diver, but he was a safety officer, and he became a diving medical officer, and then a diving medical officer in charge. And again, he was top of his class, the number one guy at Naval Medical Center. And he's on the clinical faculty of emergency medicine in Portsmouth, Virginia. And he was also deployed as a MASH doctor on two different occasions in Operation Iraqi Freedom. Now, tell me this is not a guy whose whole life has been devoted to medicine, healthcare, and the saving of people's lives.
And veterans. And also, he has a lot of awards. He has Defense Superior Service Medals.
He's got medals and awards up the wazoo.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But here's my point, sweetheart. You've got a guy that's a state senator that now gets elected and becomes a United States senator that has little to no political knowledge or experience whatsoever. No international relations. This is not a guy with a degree in international relations. He's not a guy with a degree in civics or anything. This guy's got his degree in music, okay? Basically, he's a farmer and he's a musician, okay? And he gets elected to this office, and I bet you if you asked him, he said, oh yeah, hell, I'm a great senator, as compared to a guy that's 12 years younger than him, graduated at the top of his class in every school he ever attended, is a veteran deployed as a MASH doctor, and literally every single thing that he's done has been in preparation for the job that President Trump asked him to come in and be appointed to. Now, so what kind of a senator has Tester been? Well, the National Taxpayers Union, out of 100%, voted him 11%. That's how low on the totem. And guess what? It's a taxpayers union. So you know why. This guy, all he does is raise people's taxes. And then you want to talk about international relations and how poorly he's done. The Center for Security Policy, out of 100%, gave him a 13. Okay? So here's a guy that doesn't know a damn thing about international relations and policy.
But yet he is a guy that caused Ronnie Jackson to withdraw his name for this nomination. And as to that, the point is we're in the politics of destruction. And this man, who can't, in my opinion, hold a candle to Admiral Jackson, he's hurt all of us. He's hurt our veterans, which really breaks my heart, because this could have been the best man for this job.
Yes.
To help them. And our son-in-law is a veteran.
Right.
And our son-in-law goes to these VA hospitals and he has to deal with all the rigmarole that goes along with it. And the veterans are not happy about what Senator Tester did.
Right.
So, you know, I just think it's a shame. I wish that Admiral Jackson would have stayed in. I absolutely understand the reasons that he did not, because he doesn't want to be drugged through this ringer.
And the family, too. You know, his family.
And the family, his family,
he's
right.
Got wife and kids, and why go through all of that?
Sure. But this is so unacceptable, and why we are putting up with it in this country. I really hope Montana votes this guy out of office. He is a disgrace to the Senate, and he's a disgrace to Americans.
Well, I absolutely agree. And, you know, here's something that I learned in working cases up in Montana. You know, you think it's cowboy country up there, and it's very conservative, and there are a lot of counties that are conservative up in Montana, but the liberal communities that are up there, those liberal counties, is the ones where they have universities and colleges there. So the rest of Montana is actually cowboy country, and it's conservative, but the largest voting blocks are in the big cities like Missoula and such that have got universities. And I swear to God, when I was in Missoula, Montana, you can't tell the difference between Missoula, Montana and the People's Republic of Berkeley in California, except it's got prettier, prettier environment. It's got a beautiful river running through the town that you can fly fish on.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you what, this guy has done nothing for the people in the United States, and I'm just going to be a little bit harsher, and I'll say, you know, Senator Tester, he can't even shine Ronny Jackson's shoes, you know.
Well, and to, you know, the other thing that I brought up in my article is that politics of intimidation, and you take somebody like a Kanye West or a Candace Owens, who comes out and as Black Americans support our president, and the vitriol that has come their way from the Hollywood community has been just atrocious. And I, again, you know, why do we have to go to those lengths? Why can Kanye West and Candace Owens not like their president without being lambasted by the entire Hollywood community? I mean, John Goodman put out I honestly don't know if it was a tweet or a Instagram or whatever he did that was full of vitriol at these two people because of their support for the president. I just don't understand why we can't have different opinions without going to this hate speak on everything, and why we have to destroy people over their opinions on who they prefer to be their elected officials.
Hey, I need to get another cappuccino. That was amazing.
Oh, okay, I'll make it.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Hey, the cappuccino is outstanding, but you know what? I snuck one of your brownies from the kitchen.
Well, I like homemade treats after dinner, so good for you.
Hey, so you going to do a Frost My Socks?
Well, yeah, you know, what schools are my passion. I think that we need to really up our game with schools. So in Jacksonville, Florida, there's a dad that, good for you, dad, by the way, that's looking over his daughter's homework. And on this test question, that was put out. Here's the question. I actually wrote it down. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here's the question that was on the multiple choice test. Ursula was devastated when her boyfriend broke up with her after having sex. To get revenge, she had sex with his best friend the next day. Ursula had a beautiful baby girl 9 months later. Ursula has type O blood and her ex-boyfriend has AB blood and his best friend is type A blood. If her baby daddy is her ex-boyfriend, what could the possible blood types of her baby not be?
So this would be a biology genetics question, right?
I don't know that it was a biology question, but the dad went to the school and complained about it, and I would be the first one at the school complaining about a question like this. This is a sex question.
Yeah.
It's not just the whole way that it's worded is not as a biology question.
Right.
It could be, and I hadn't thought of that, to be honest with you, but
well, I think it's a biology question, but here's the thing. It's completely inappropriate.
It's completely inappropriate. Again, what are our schools thinking when they're teaching our children? And parents need to be looking at what their kids are bringing home, because the school actually agreed that this was inappropriate and that they would take action. It was on the 11th grade test for an anatomy exam, okay? This is not even, I don't even know if this is anatomy.
It's not anatomy.
No, it's not anatomy.
It's biology and genetics. And you know who could answer that off the top of her head? Karen.
Our daughter, yeah. Yeah, but this was on an anatomy test. But the thing is that it was supposedly a district-generated worksheet that the teacher printed offline. Is anybody looking at what we are saying to our children in school? That's my point. So that's my frost my socks.
Well, you know what? You're absolutely right. And I don't think the parents, well, I think it just absolutely depends on the school district and the school, but I'm not so sure that parents spend a lot of time in their PTAs and in the vetting process, and a lot of stuff gets snuck past them. Okay, and for sure in the university system where there is no PTA set up, right? So I've got to frost my socks, and it's from that state that we love to hate, and that's California.
Okay.
So here's a couple. And, you know, we even have friends in San Juan Capistrano down in,
oh, absolutely.
In SoCal. Well, this is in San Juan Capistrano. And so a couple, their names are Stephanie and Chuck Fromm. They've been living in San Juan Capistrano for 18 years. And they're religious people. They're Christians. And they hold a weekly Bible study in their home. And, you know, not to bother anybody or anything. And they get, you know, somewhere between 30 and 40 friends there, you know, once a week. And from 10 o'clock in the morning until noon on Sundays, they do Bible studies. And there's no traffic congestion or traffic issues. They already talked with all the people that are in Bible study. And those people, you know, fill up cars and they only take, you know, a few cars. And they've got the type of property where you can put all those cars on your property so you're not blocking people's driveways or the street or anything. Well, son of a gun, if they don't get a violation, a first one of $300, and they said that if you don't stop having Bible study at your house, we're going to push it up to $500 because you don't meet a conditional use permit. Well, what the heck, you know? So I just wanted to just hear what you had to say about that.
Well, I, you know, this is not the first time I've heard of this. I wasn't aware of this one, but I just stay out of my life and quit butting into my life and my religion. And I want the state to just butt the heck out.
Well, you know, this is one of those slippery slope things, right? So does that mean that every time that you have a barbecue or a get together or a wedding or a funeral or a wake, and you've got, you know, 30 to 50 people over at your house, you've got to apply for a conditional use permit? You know,
well, I have no idea.
Well, guess what? They don't, right? So, you know, this is just the city picking on this poor couple.
Well, and like I say, with it being something with religion like that, it's not the first time that this has happened. And they do make these rules that say that you can't have these kinds of things. It's just like you can't have your own poker game in your own living room and things like that.
But that's gambling. That's
well, I understand, but I still want them to butt out of my personal life.
I'm with you.
What I do in my living room is my business.
That's right. I agree.
Okay.
Well, you got some good news?
You know, I love my good news.
Let's hear it.
And so, you know, there actually is a San Francisco 49ers from your hometown there.
Don't push that around.
Oh, an NFL player that took a young lady to the prom in Alabama. So he actually graduated from this school in Hazelwood High School in Town Creek, Alabama, some years back. And so defensive linebacker Don Jones, he's 27 years old, stayed friends with some of the families in his hometown there. And so Lindsay Preston is 18 years old, and she has Down syndrome. And the prom was coming up, and he stayed in touch with his family, and the mom said, hey, you know, what do you think about taking Lindsay to the prom? And he gladly said he would, and he did.
Oh,
and
nice.
He said that he had a wonderful time, taught those guys some dance moves over there. And, you know, it was a good event all around. So, you know, I just think that to me, good news and heroes are just ordinary people doing extraordinary things. Those are the people that I look for every day. So, you know, here's an extraordinary person, but not necessarily in a good way. There was a carjacking that happened earlier in the week because a mom left her car running with her son in it. Now, the son's not a baby. The son was 12 years old, actually.
Oh, okay.
Still sitting in the back seat of the car.
Okay.
So don't really have a problem with that. She ran in to check into her room at a motel. And this young man decided to carjack the car. So 23-year-old Francisco Esmerado decided to steal the vehicle.
But he didn't know the kid was in it.
The 12-year-old is still in the back.
Wow.
Well, when he noticed that this kid was in the back, instead of continuing the carjacking, he actually flagged down an officer and told him he'd taken the car with this young man in it and wanted to give it back. So, you know, all's well that ended well. And, you know, I have to say that the guy shouldn't have carjacked a car, but thank goodness that he had some form of conscience when he saw that there was a child in the back seat.
Well, that's more than a carjacking. It's a kidnapping, right? That'd be interesting to see how that ends up.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to go, but at least the young man in the back seat is safe. Kudos to one of our deputy chiefs, Jason Bentley. So in Pennsylvania, there's a man there in Pennsylvania, an elderly man whose wife was taken to the hospital, and he had no way to get to the hospital to see his wife. And this deputy stepped up and took him to the hospital. And the thing about this story is it's not unique. It happens every single day with our officers. And, you know, and I know that these things are just routine things that police officers do. And with all the talk about people murdering our officers and all the talk about bad things that people want to see in officers, every day, in every way, officers do good deeds for people.
Absolutely.
And I just want to say that because we don't really give them enough credit.
You know, again, here's the deal. We just need to have much better press. And we need to talk about some of the things we do, but because we're the quiet professionals, we don't really tout the stuff that we do every single day. You know, firefighters,
well,
first responders, cops, you know. But I love the fact that, you know, this is a really important to me. This is a really important part of our nightly conversation when we're having coffee. So I love you bringing up these stories.
Yeah, I enjoy finding them because it brightens my day. And I hope it brightens your day, honey, because we get enough bad news every day, and these things give me a little faith in humanity. So there's a first ever homeless Girl Scout troop that just crushed their cookie sales goal. So they're in New York. This troop is made up out of 300 people, that children living in homeless shelters.
Wow.
And they formed a Girl Scout troop called Troop 6000, and their goal was to sell 6,000 boxes of cookies. And they had 6 days to do it in. How many boxes?
6 days. That's a thousand cookie boxes a day.
How many boxes do you think that they sold?
Well, beyond 6,000 or under 6,000? Well, I don't know.
Beyond 6,000. 32,500 boxes.
Holy cow.
Of cookies. These are homeless girls living in shelters. They received, besides the 32,500 boxes, many people made monetary donations to the troop of about $15,000 to pay for activities and trips. So this is the very first time that this troop has ever participated in the annual Girl Scout cookie sale. And next year they have their sights set on selling even more. So congratulations to those young ladies for their tremendous effort, and you know, just absolutely love it.
And you know what? You know, kudos to the person that is the scout leader that came up with the amazing and very unique idea about forming a Girl Scout troop out of homeless girls in shelters.
Okay, absolutely.
Because, I mean, if you want to talk about people that need direction and mentoring and have a pretty crappy life, it's those poor girls. So, I mean, my hat's off to the scout leader that came up with that idea.
Well, and I totally agree with you. And you know, scouting is such a worthwhile thing. And although I was never a Girl Scout, I was a Bluebird. And I still to this day remember all of the experiences that I had.
Well, I just think it's such a worthwhile organization. And, you know, that sometimes when the parents can't come forward and they spend time with the kids, you know, it's those scout leaders that step up to the plate and mentor those young men and women.
Yeah. And I have to have a dog story because, you know, I mean, we love our dog so much, and she's so much fun and does crazy things. This story touched my heart so much. So, you know, our dog is a little beggar. Okay, she's begging for treats all day long, and too often I give them to her. But in Colombia, okay, in Monterrey Casanare, I guess, in Colombia, there is a dog that's kind of a campus resident at Diversified Technical Education Institute, okay? And the dog, it looks like it might be a lab kind of dog. So she kind of watches what goes on around this campus. And the faculty the faculty gives him food and a place to sleep. And the dog's name is Negro or Negro. I'm not really sure because
Negro.
It's in Colombia. So it would be Negro.
Got to be a
right.
Black lab.
Okay. So the dog has been paying attention to that when people go to this little store on campus, the store has cookies. And that people give the store hand them a green bill and they get a cookie, right? So the dog has paid attention to this. Every day the dog gets, they have these plants all around because it's Colombia after all,
okay,
and tropical climate. And the dog tried something similar. So the dog grabs a big green leaf and brings it to the shopkeeper. And the dog now gets a cookie. And it is just the cutest ever picture of this dog with this leaf in his mouth walking up to the store and getting a cookie. So and this is something Desi, our dog, would do in a heartbeat. If she could figure out that she'd get a cookie, she would bring a green leaf as well. And so now the dog has learned that it's magic, that every day he comes to the store to buy his own cookie with his green bill, which is a leaf.
That's absolutely amazing.
I thought that was just as cute as could be.
Love that story. Love it.
Yeah. And then my little hero of the day, and you know, lately, Ron, my heroes have been kids, because kids are coming up to the plate in life, which I love to see. So in Louisiana, this little boy, 8 years old, his name is Jaron Johnson, he found a $100 bill on the floor at Walmart.
Wow.
In Louisiana.
Lucky
and
kid.
You know, it bothered him that somebody must have lost that $100 bill. So he asked his mom if they could call the store and see if anybody had reported losing it. And at the time that she called, nobody had reported losing it, but she left their number. And indeed, somebody did call and say that, asked if anybody had found a $100 bill. And the gentleman who lost the $100 was 86 years old.
Oh, wow.
James Grice. And James Grice is on a very fixed income. He had gone to Walmart to get some food for himself. And when he found that he had no money, he went home with no food. And what James Grice said is, Lord, let someone who really needs it find it, because when I turn things over to the Lord, I don't mess with it anymore. I don't fool with it anymore. And so the little boy got the money back to James Grice, and James Grice gave the little boy a $20 reward. So all was well, that ended well. But here's just to say that here's the little boy who had a conscience that knew that that money wasn't his, and it really did truly be that somebody really needed that money. It wasn't just money that they were buying, you know, video games with or something. It was money that they were buying their food with. So that little boy, Jaron Johnson, is my hero.
You know, that's a wonderful story. You know, one of the things I like about having coffee with you at night is that, you know, the days are long, we work our rear ends off, and when we turn on the news, there's just so much bad news, and you and I, you know, talk about it. We talk about it today, right? And the thing that I love about these conversations, it's especially towards the end of our conversation, just before we're getting ready to go to bed, is that you have these wonderful stories that are so optimistic and inspiring. So I just wanted to thank you so much for bringing that to the table.
Well, I love to, and I need to, and I feel like you and I, you know, we see so many people that are heroes, and we see so many people doing good things, and they don't get credit.
Right.
So I want to give them credit.
Well, it's a blessing. So that's about it for me, kiddo. I'm getting kind of tired.
Okay. I love you.
I love you.